Oh, that's right. It's 4:07 in the afternoon. Must be time for Meet Me at the Diner. That's right. And this afternoon, we are here with Jenny Dearin. She is running for SOS. Save Our State. No, Secretary of State. There you go. How you doing today, Jenny?
I am doing great in Greenwood.
That's right. So where do you live?
I actually live on Sullivan's Island.
Oh, nice.
But for those people who aren't familiar with Sullivan's Island, Charleston.
Charleston. That's great. So did you make the trip up here today?
I did. This is my first stop.
First stop. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, you know, you have had quite a history. You've done quite a lot of interesting things in your life. What, first off, though, I want to ask you, what has made you decide to run for Secretary of State? I mean, that's an office that nobody really thinks about.
Exactly. Nobody. I'm finding as I travel around the state, nobody thinks about. The reason I'm running for Secretary of State, the reason I'm running is because I have been working for the last couple of years. I'm a co-founder of an organization called Project XX. It's a nonpartisan advocacy organization that encourages, its total mission in life is to encourage women to run for office, boards and commissions, other leadership positions in the state. Just run, because if we don't run, we can't win. And we need more women. Mm-hmm. I'm a believer that a more representative government is a better government. And so I've been traveling around the state for a few years suggesting that every other woman run, and I woke up about 9 months ago and I thought, you know, I should walk the talk, I should run for office, and Secretary of State is a really great fit for me.
Why is it a great fit for you?
It's a good fit because a few reasons. One, I am and have been a customer of the office for 40 years as a small business person, as a nonprofit leader, a professional fundraiser, and most recently a researcher trying to get information about boards and commissions. So I've seen its inefficiencies, and when you can see them, you can fix them. So that's sure. Really the biggest reason why I'm a fit. I do have 10 years as in the private sector as a marketing person, so I know how to communicate things well, and that's a big part of the office. How do you start a business? How do you start a nonprofit? The more clear you can be about that, the better job you do, so that makes me a good fit. And I am a nonprofit leader, a successful one. The nonprofit I founded, Wings for Kids, has been named as one of the best managed nonprofits in the state. It's gotten enormous national recognition. And so I've been successful in that sector, and that's a large part of the regulatory work in the Secretary of State's office. And because I know it so well, I can identify the regulations that are either too cumbersome or simply shouldn't be in existence, in my opinion, and eliminate those. So those are all a lot of reasons why I think this is a position that is a good fit for me.
Yeah, but it sounds like you were having such a great life.
I know.
Why put yourself in this position and put yourself through all this hell to become this Secretary
right.
of State?
Well, that's a very good question. Most of my friends say, you know, Jenny, you've been involved with so many important things that really, you know, change people's lives. And, you know, you're not going to change the world being Secretary of State. It's an administrative office. And that's true. But it would be fun to fix a part of state government that's broken. I am really a good manager. I like to fix things. And it reminds me very much
of
the
position right here with Sharp Facets
there
in the radio
go.
Station.
Right.
Maybe
you
want to come on board
here.
Okay.
I could take this place and whip it into shape.
Okay.
Exactly.
But I just find it amazing. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that women sometimes stand back from getting involved in public office because, number one, they're involved in so many things, particularly when it comes to kids and family and whatnot, that it's hard to say this would be a good thing to do.
Yes. It's like having babies. There never seems to be a good time.
Right.
You know, there's always a reason not to. So that does get in the way. One of the things that I think women do, they obviously become involved in lots of different
sure.
activities in their communities. And one of the things that I would talk with women about when I was promoting women running through Project XX is that You know, if you're really interested in education and you added up the hours that you spend as the head of the PTA, as the room mother, as the whatever, if you added all those things up, you could run for the school board and be a school board member, not taking any more time and having enormous impact, because you'd be sitting at the table where policies are made that really, you know, have an impact on public education. So you're right. Women are usually, you know, doing a lot of things, but I'm trying to convince women at the right time in their life or whatever that they should consider stepping out into a position of greater leadership, sort of bring their work together.
Sure. Well, you know, we talk about women in business, and more women are in business, and particularly in this economic climate that we've been through, a lot more women have had to step up and step out maybe of their comfort zone and take that higher profile job just because it was needed for the family.
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting. It's you know, we are, South Carolina is at the bottom of a lot of lists, but one of the lists that we're at the top of, I think we're number six in, we've had an explosion of women-owned businesses. So women are really stepping out on their own, stepping up into leadership positions in business. So in business, I don't know the specific stats for South Carolina for women in leadership business positions, but I do know the stats for government, for our legislature. And, you know, we all kind of think, oh, well, we're not where we should be in terms of representation by women, but we're making progress. Well, in government, we're not. In government, we're not. We are exactly where we were 20 years ago, in terms of the percentage of women in our General Assembly. So we're not making a lot of progress in government, and that's where a lot of important things happen, in the House and in the Senate, and we're trying to encourage more women to run, because that is part of the problem. You cannot win if you don't run.
Yeah, that's like, you know, you can't, you don't have an opportunity to win in a raffle. You don't have an opportunity to win in a giveaway. You don't have an opportunity if you don't put your name in the hat.
Exactly.
So those are the things that are so important today. But why did you call it Project Double X?
Well, that's a good question, and I have to laugh at myself. I co-founded it with a woman whose name is Nikki Harden, and she is the founder of a publication called Skirt.
Oh, I know Skirt. Sure.
Yeah, Skirt's great. Yeah. And, you know, Nikki would describe herself as a real raving feminist.
Right.
And so we were working together and we were trying to come up with a name. Mm-hmm. So she emailed me and she said, what do you think about Project XX? And I said, well, I don't know. Do you want me to fill in, you know, what? And she picked up the phone. She called me and she said, Jenny, I cannot believe you're at XX, you get it? Double X chromosomes? You,
right.
I said, no, I didn't get that. Anyway, so,
I wondered if that's what we were going with that. Yes.
That is the name of it, and now I know why it's called Project Double X.
Okay, all right. Well, we are here with Jenny Dearen. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. Jenny is a Democrat, but she's been endorsed by Club for Growth. I want to say that again, and then we're going to go to a break. She's a Democrat, but she's been endorsed by Project Club for Growth. So don't you go away. Come back in just a second. If you got a question, give us a call, 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery. I think everybody should know. We all know Chris Traynor here, and Chris Traynor interviewed you for the Free Times talking about how the Club for Growth endorses a Democrat.
Right. First time ever.
First time ever.
Making history.
That's right. That's huge.
It is huge.
Across the whole
United
States, right?
It feels so
good.
I mean, I just can't tell you how good it feels.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's an example of what I think we're all longing for generally, but particularly right now, that people come together when it makes sense to get good things done.
Well, we sure haven't seen that in Congress up there,
no,
have we?
No, we haven't. So that's what I mean. People are really, really longing for that. So I think that the reaction that this endorsement has triggered is one of optimism from people, from my Republican friends and my Democrat. I mean, you know, both of them, it turned their head.
Sure.
You know, on both sides. Democrats were like, what? Republicans were, what?
Yeah.
And, but after, you know,
the dust
settled, 30 seconds of the what, they're like, well, this is really, this is good. This is good that the Club for Growth is looking beyond, because the Club for Growth, it does talk about, we are about policies, not party. Now, their policies usually align with Republicans, which is why they endorse Republicans up until now.
Sure.
Always. But they really are true to what they say, which is they're not, it's not an arm of the Republican Party. And they looked at me and my platform and my ideas, and of course they have 12 years of record to look at from the incumbent, and there was no question in their mind that the person who aligned with what they believe is needed is me.
Well, that's pretty huge.
Yes,
and
that is
quite
huge.
A very good endorsement. And of course, you know, when we look back over the state's history, Democrats originally were a lot more conservative than what they are today.
That's right. And you know, it's you know, the conservative, I think, anyway, and this is a good example of this race. In terms of, if you take conservative, the values and the policies that usually conservatives believe in, I am the conservative in this race. Now, in other races, I would most definitely not be the conservative. But in terms of this office, I'm the conservative. I mean, my friend, who's a big Republican in the upstate, said, there's a rhino in that office right now. Because, you know, there's a lot of regulations, you know, a lot of bloat, a lot of mission creep, not interested in it becoming a cabinet position, just like it the way it is, status quo. And so I don't think there's, I think people oftentimes you know, they're a mix. There's some things that they're conservative, would be considered in the conservative camp. Others would be progressive, liberal, whatever words you want to use. Most people are a little bit of a mixed bag, I think. And but normally we fall one way or the other,
sure,
usually. But it's nice when we can come together on things that we can come together on.
Absolutely.
I love voting for Republicans. I am a Democrat. I love voting for Republicans.
Because?
Because it reminds me that I am not a robot. It reminds me that I'm a thinking person, and I don't always do what somebody is telling me to do. I think about it.
So you're saying you don't always vote straight party?
No, I never vote straight party.
Okay.
And you know what I've learned, and I didn't know, maybe some of your listeners don't know this, there, we are one of only a few states where that's still allowed.
For real?
To pull the straight party ticket. I had no idea. I thought everybody, you know, all states. They don't. Most states, you have to
physically fill in
physically the go down the ballot, which I think is a good idea.
Sure.
I mean, even if you're going to do RRRRR or DDDDD, at least
right.
you have to do it.
Right.
I think that's good, but I don't know that that's going to change anytime soon in our state. But
Interesting. All right. So you've also gotten the Order of the Palmetto. That's a huge, huge, huge deal.
It is a huge deal.
Jenny. Yes.
It is a huge deal. It is the highest civilian honor that our state bestows on a person.
Now, when did you get that?
I got it in 2010. And I have in one way or another, like most of your listeners probably, have been involved in service to my community in a variety of ways, my kids' schools. I did found a nonprofit, which was very important. I have worked on lots of boards of nonprofits, like many other people. I wasn't living here with when Hugo happened, but I came down the day after and created and managed a huge call center for help. You know, like many people, I've just been involved with service for a long time. And
you believe
fortunate.
In getting in there and rolling up your sleeve and doing something about the problem.
Yes, I do. And I was fortunate enough to be recognized for it. And there are tons of people who should be recognized for it. But I am proud of it. And I do think that today, at a time when so many people distrust elected officials, I think it is very important for people who run for office to have a track record of service.
Sure.
Because then people, then they, there's a reason for people to believe that this is about service. It's not about self.
Which brings up another question. Have you ever run for public office before?
I never have.
See, I knew it.
I never have. And you know what? People love that.
They love that?
They love that. People, you know, there are a lot of, many people just think that people stay in there. They don't think it. They do.
Right.
They stay in there too long.
Right.
They stay in for just, you know, more than forever. And
well, the perks are pretty good. You got to admit.
The perks are pretty good. Yes. They are very good. And so people, I have found, they like me and my candidacy for a lot of reasons, but one of the big ones is, you've never run for office. I love that.
Yeah.
You know, fresh ideas, fresh perspective.
We need
that's
that.
Good.
We
do
need
that. We do.
And, you know, when we look at beyond the state, but in what we've seen in Congress and the Senate and everything, and the races and how some of them have been turned upside down, the one for the Speaker, not the Speaker of the House, the, what's his name in Virginia?
That got right. Eric Cantor.
Cantor.
I mean, look at that. What a surprise that was.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that was because, basically, I think he wasn't listening to what the voters wanted.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And
right.
they've taken somebody who has no experience and put him up there to run against.
Right. He totally forgot who he works for.
Exactly.
And I just think that that is, to me, you know, for example, my opponent is basically not running. I find that disrespectful to voters. If I'm fortunate enough to become Secretary of State, now I think I'll only do it for 4 years because I'm going to be working very hard.
Because you're going to get this job done and move out, right?
Right. Have the position become a cabinet position, and 4 years from now, I'm 64. I'll be ready to go be with my grandkids and, you know, do other things. But I do think that it's important for people to have the respect for voters that every 4 years that they go out and say, how am I doing? Do you think I'm doing a good job? These are my ideas for the next campaign.
Sure.
And I find that, and also debating, you know, this whole thing where people are not debating. I think voters deserve to hear from their elected folks, even if, you know what, they do think they don't need to work for it, that they're going to win no matter what. I mean, it's hard. In my case, I'm going up against a 12-year incumbent who is a Republican. Now, most people are not putting their money on me.
Right.
Although I have become sort of a race to watch.
Well, because basically South Carolina has become very boring. I thought this race was going to be exciting.
Yeah,
yes,
well, I hope
the
it
governor's
will be.
Way
yeah,
race
oh,
was
right,
going to be a big one. And, you know,
right,
some
right.
of these other races were going to be exciting. But so far, it's been a ho-hum.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it is important to have, during election seasons, I think it's really important for people to run for a lot of reasons. I mean, I'm focused, we've been talking a lot about women running, but it's just important to have competitive races. That's what keep people, you know, sharp. And, you know, I've already noticed that the incumbent Secretary of State, he's now talking about stuff that I don't think crossed his mind. Why is he talking about it? Because I'm talking about it. That's good, no matter what happens on November 4th.
Sure.
It's a really good thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's why it's good to shake things up every once in a while,
yes,
isn't it?
It is good to shake
it is good
up.
To shake things up. So as we're sitting here this afternoon, we're going to talk some more with Jeanne Dearen about her life, what she's done, what she sees futuristically for the state. I understand you've also been endorsed by Joe Riley.
I have been. I have been, who, in my view, is one of the great public servants our state has seen. Unfortunately, this is his last term.
Yeah.
So people in Charleston are very nervous about what are they going to do after 40 years of Joe Riley, which, speaking of serving for a long time, but he is a public servant and a leader who I think has so much respect. He is a good person. He's a good listener. He works hard. He's so honest. You know, he still lives in the same house. He's, you know, he's just Moses on, you know, he's just a good person who is very smart and cares.
And he endorsed you.
And he endorsed me, which of course makes him just spectacular.
All right. Hey, let's hear South Carolina news and a word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe Cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery. I'm Ann Eller, and I am here with Ginny Dearin. We are having a good time. She is running for Secretary of State, and she just told me she had a $100 cap on her donations. How are you doing that now, Ginny? Being a fundraiser as you are, you should be able to raise lots of money and spend lots of money on this race.
Well, I could raise a lot of money because I have raised millions of dollars for causes and candidates. But I just, you know, every race is different. And I could not wrap my mind around the idea of raising $1 million plus, which is what you have to do if you're going to do paid media and, you know, buy spots on your radio station and all of that. You have to buy enough to
get the word out.
To get the word out.
Particularly in a statewide race.
Exactly. Huge state. So you have to do $1 million plus. I could not wrap my mind around raising $1 million for an office that most people, 98% of the people would be my estimate, do not have a clue what the Secretary of State is, and they really don't care about it. And so I just decided, you know, I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way. I'm going to raise $100 contributions. My budget's $50,000. It's basically money to travel the state. I am proud that I have never stayed in a hotel room for the last 8.5 months. So it's been fun staying
camping
with
people. Camping in your car?
Oh, no, okay. Not camping in my car, but staying with people, which has been so fun. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it is this huge, big money in politics.
Which is another reason I think a lot of women that don't run. And particularly a lot of women aren't good at raising funds either,
yes,
too.
Yes, women are not good at raising funds. Women are not very good at giving to political races. You know, there's a story that I think is pretty entertaining. And there's a couple, and the woman, it was her 25th reunion at Wellesley. Mm-hmm. And they had a big luncheon, fundraising, and blah, blah, blah. And she went home that night, and she said to her, and they wanted her to make a $10,000 commitment. She said, well, I want to go home and talk to my husband about it. So she goes home. She gets with her husband, comes home for dinner, and they're talking over dinner. And she says, you know, honey, I'd really like to make a $10,000 commitment to my Wellesley 25th anniversary. And he said, absolutely, you should do that. As a matter of fact, I just made a $100,000 commitment to the Harvard Fund. And it was just classic. You know, it's like women, you know, even if you have tons of money, we, you know, men are used to writing, you know, get around a table, all right, everybody get your checkbook out and everybody's stroking big checks. Women, you know, we are more used to, you know, we're doing the bake sales and it's not that we're not, I mean, obviously we're tremendously generous.
Right.
But our...
The dollar figures are
dollar
a lot smaller.
Figures, like, but people, women are beginning to realize how important it is to support people, but I do think it has gotten just crazy in terms of the money in politics. It makes it very difficult for most people to run for office, and that's a problem, in my opinion.
I think it's a big problem because there are plenty of good people out there that would love to run.
Yes.
But they have no ability to raise the funds, or do they have even the belief that they could raise the money?
Right.
Plus, taking the time off from a job or a career,
that's right.
That is another aspect, which is one of the problems that we have actually in Colombia because of the way they meet 8 months out of the year.
Right. Yeah. It is a huge problem. And, you know, this is a chance, my race is a chance for all of your listeners to go out and vote for me so that you can prove, you know what? She only spent $50,000 on a statewide race, and she won. I can do that. I'm going to run next time.
And that goes back to the Double X Project, right?
Right. That goes back to the Double X Project. But for whether it's men or women, it is a problem with having to raise so much money. And
I think women are not real good also, Ginny, in saying, I'd like to have your vote. I'd like to have your money to help me run for the vote.
Right.
We're just not made that way.
Yes. Women are very good at doing things for other people.
Right.
They're not particularly, we need practice.
And if they are that way, they get scorned big time for being into themselves.
Right.
Yeah, there
right.
you go. Right, that's right, the other right, side right, of it. Right. Yeah.
Into themselves or the old, I don't like your tone.
Right. Exactly.
You know, well, if you were a guy and you said the exact same thing with the exact same inflection, it would be fine. You'd be a leader.
That's
you say
right.
the woman saying it, it's like, oh, I don't like your tone. Use a different tone.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. We all know. We've all experienced. You know, we've all experienced.
Anybody
that.
That's been in business has experienced
yes.
that for sure.
Exactly.
For sure. All right. So one of the other things that you want to do with the Secretary of State's office, you want to have a notary program where it's a video.
Yes.
What a concept.
What a concept. Seems just so simple, doesn't it?
Yes.
It is the way we learn today. You know, I believe that the services of the Secretary of State's office should be fashioned for the way we live and learn today and the way we do business today.
And now, how do they do it right now? How do
right
they do
now,
it right
what now? What they do is they have 8 workshops across the state. And, you know, that costs, I've done calculation. My opponent says, I don't know where she comes up with those numbers. Well, I came up with the numbers just like everybody does. I took a piece of paper and I said, all right, well, this is how much staff time it would take, and that's how much it costs and mileage to get there and whatever.
Sure.
And it costs about $33,000. Well, in the big scheme of the government budget, that's not a huge amount of money. But what I would do is create a really great library of video tutorials, and that way, not only would you spend less money, this is where the concept of where I'm saying, oh, I'm going to cut the budget and improve customer service. You would cut the budget, you'd spend less money, and who wouldn't prefer to stay either in your office or at home, fold your laundry, watch it on your phone, watch it on your computer, go to the library and watch it at your own schedule, as opposed to getting a babysitter, driving to the community college, going to the thing, having somebody read the PowerPoint slide to you, which we've all been to those in
right.
those workshops.
Pretty boring.
Yeah, and you know, drive back home, blah, blah, blah. Who wants to waste all that time? So it's a waste of people's time. It's a waste of tax dollars. I did, just for fun, just as an example, I produced a 4-minute video on how to apply to be a notary. And I did it, and so I had this press conference, and I said, all right, well, here you are. Here's the building where they're going to have one of the workshops. Would you rather do this, or would you rather do this? This costs $250. This cost, these workshops cost, you know, $33,000.
Sure.
So that's just an example, but it really is about coming from the perspective of, wow, what's the best way we could get this learning out there? Because it's very basic learning. You can
sure.
imagine how to be a notary. I mean, how, you know, it's important,
sure.
but it's not, you don't have to have a discussion with a faculty member.
Right.
You know, actually, it's
pretty
better.
Cut and dried, right?
Exactly. So that's just an example of, one example of how I would cut the budget and improve customer service.
Okay. Now, some of the other things that you believe in. Now, I do know that your opponent has put some of the things online that
right.
you can go look up a corporation, you can look up this, you can look up that. A few years ago, you couldn't do that.
Right.
What else are you thinking, Ginny?
Well, I'm thinking that it would be right now, it depends on how you count the numbers. I say out of the 139 things you can do, 4 can you complete online. Well, my opponent counts the things that you can do online on something called SC Boss, which is actually part of the Department of Revenue. His office is one of 12 agencies. So, mm-hmm. okay, fine, go ahead and count those. No matter how you look at it, it's the very small portion of the things that you do online. So to me, all of that should be online, and it shouldn't take 12 years to take care of it. But let me give you another example of something that I think shows my kind of thinking. Recently, the Secretary of State got a $250,000 earmark to create a database for boards and commissions. Well, I'm all for that because I've had to try to get paperwork. But here's the thing. How do you spend $250,000 on a very simple database? It's all public information, so it's not security issues. I went out and I got 2 estimates from companies, private companies, that do this business.
Mm-hmm.
They were both under $10,000. Only can a big, bloated bureaucracy spend $250,000 on a database, and the database actually doesn't even work very well. It really doesn't serve customers well. And I think the reason it does, I think the reason it costs so much is because it's a big bloated bureaucracy. I think the reason it doesn't work very well is they don't understand what customers want and need, and therefore they design it in a way that doesn't work for the customers.
Yeah, that is a problem if you don't understand what you're trying to get out of it. Like, you almost have to design a program based on what the end result is, not what the beginning is.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
And if you do that, then you come out with a lot better results in the end.
Right. Exactly. So I'm just for being smarter about it. I mean, my solution to that was, look, and this is just an example of having a good idea and thinking outside of the box. So for me, okay, boards and commissions. You have two customers, citizens who want to serve,
right,
and the governor and the legislature who need to pick and appoint and elect. And so my idea was, hey, everybody's got to be a registered voter to apply.
Correct.
So when you get on a board, you get the paperwork in the Secretary of State's office, you put in one number, your voter registration number, because you have partnered smartly with the Election Commission. And the Election Commission has all the information about you that's public. Not only your name and address, et cetera, but your gender, how old you are, whether you live in an urban area, whatever. And so that is a smart way to do it. And what I would do is partner with them, and then I would simply tag those boards and commissions with interest areas like education, medical, whatever, the different boards. So you as a citizen, you go in there right now, basically you can pull up a board that gives you no good information. The way I would do it, A, it would be much easier, therefore cheaper, because you're partnering with somebody who's already doing the data entry stuff. But also, you'd go in and you'd say, okay, my name's Jenny Dearen. I put in my address. I'm interested in education and animals. Click those buttons, boom, up pops a list of vacancies that relate to what you're interested in and where you live. Because a lot of the board seats,
sure,
you know, are linked to where you live. As opposed to, like right now, it comes up and it says, oh, well, this seat is for people in the 9th Judicial District. Well, who knows what the 9th Judicial...
There you go.
You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
That's right, yeah.
It's not user... It's not set up in a way that's efficient and that works for customers. And on the other end, in terms of the picking, I know that Governor Haley and the legislature would love it because... One of the things that's in the law, there are two things. One, you have to get a qualified person. Well, duh. The second is you have to take into consideration the demographics of the whole board. You want it to reflect the state.
Sure.
Well, the only way you can keep that in mind when you're appointing is to be able to have the data. So with my solution of doing it with the Election Commission, you can push a button for the medical university, comes up charts that say, this is the demographics, men, women, age, rural, urban, geographically, and this is what it should look like, this picture. So you, when you're thinking about appointments, you should think about how getting more rural people or whatever it is. That's called helpful, as opposed to what he's just spent $250,000 doing, which is called unhelpful and a waste.
That is a very big waste.
Yeah, I think it is.
And he got a grant for that?
He got an earmark.
An earmark. Okay.
Right, exactly. I mean, it came from the General Appropriations Fund.
Which is our money.
Yeah, which
was
is your
money.
Which
yes,
is our
yeah.
money.
Yes.
And, you know, that he, you know, I've got literally, as I said, I got two quotes from two companies, less than $10,000. I was in Greenville 2 days ago, and I showed this group of technology entrepreneurs. I pulled it up on the screen. I said, here it is. Here is the $250,000 database. And they looked at it, and they couldn't even believe that it could cost $10,000.
Well, we've seen some of these things on the federal level,
right,
too, haven't
exactly.
we?
You know,
I mean, look at how much they spend on the
million-dollar
affordable care.
A million-dollar toilet seat or whatever it is. But, you know, that's the kind of wasteful kind of bureau. And I don't know where that comes from. Why would anybody ever think? I think anybody in the real world, when I tell them this, all they're thinking is, well, that's sort of a simple Excel sheet. I mean, they can't comprehend. But I don't know that the Secretary of State, the incumbent, has really ever been out in that world, you know, because his background is a great background, juvenile, person working in the juvenile courts and clerk of court, but never really, I mean, he's been in government. So if that's all you've seen, that seems reasonable.
Sure.
To the rest of it seems like crazy.
Exactly, exactly. So what else do you want to do with that office?
Well, let's see. One of the things that I think is important is the situation of fees. I think that they should be cut. And people say, well, what fees would you cut? Well, first of all, I'd have to convince the legislature to cut the fees. But I think, you know, we know our legislature. They're into cutting taxes, cutting fees, which they consider hidden taxes, and cutting regulations. So... I'd like to cut the fees to nonprofit organizations, for example. And I believe that the fees, and I think most people think this, including the members of the legislature, fees should be based on how much does it cost us to perform that service plus a little for overhead. And that's the basis upon which fees should be charged. And if you do it on that basis, we're charging nonprofits twice as much as we should. It doesn't cost much to provide the services that they're providing, basically taking in their paperwork. And the incumbent Secretary of State brags about the ROI of the office, which if you're not into finance, you might not know that, return on investment.
Sure.
Money making. And I'm saying to myself, this is an office that's there to serve the taxpayers. This Correct. Is not a money-making venture. You shouldn't, because what happens is his budget is $2.4 million, and he brings in about $2.5 million. So that excess, the ROI, just goes into the general fund to be used for whatever. In my view, that's not the way it should work. If we need more money in the general fund, fine, make the case to do that.
Sure.
Don't be charging fees that are more than they should be charged.
But that's a time-honored way of doing things. Add more fees in order to get more into the general fund.
Well,
whether it's boat taxes,
right,
car
right,
taxes,
right, right,
whatever
right,
they are.
Well,
yeah.
I will be fighting hard to reduce fees because I think it is wrong. I think it's wrong-headed to just push money into the general fund. I think if you want some more money in the general fund for something specific, you need to go make the case for that.
Agreed.
Not to come in the back door with excess fees.
Okay. Now, you also are for the Secretary of State's office being as part of the cabinet under
yes.
the administrative. Tell us why on that.
Well, because right now, first of all, our state has 8 constitutional officers and we have more than most states. I'm all for balance of power, for sure. But I do think we have too many constitutional officers. And to me, and one of them, the Adjutant General, is on the ballot in November.
Yes, he is.
To make that a cabinet position.
Correct.
Secretary of State, in my mind, should be the next one. It is paperwork. It's literally, think of, you know, Dolly Parton in the secretary in an office. It's not a diplomat. It's just paperwork. I just think, why in the world would we elect someone who basically accepts and organizes paperwork? So I think it should be a cabinet position, and in doing so, it's accountable to someone. The problem now is the Secretary of State's office is accountable to no one except the voters every 4 years. But since the voters don't know or care about what the Secretary of State does, they're really not accountable because nobody is voting. Because they're just, you know.
And nobody is looking it over saying this
exactly.
is not right or this is wrong.
Exactly. So it's just this little bloated bureaucracy over here on the side that just keeps growing and existing and not having to perform based on doing a better and better and better and better and better job. And it's interesting because that's the way it is with most secretaries of state's offices. And guess what? That makes the bar very low. You know, one of the things a smart person does is say, oh, I'm going to go out and copy what, you know, some of the great stuff being done at other secretaries
sure.
of state. Well, as I studied them, we're not unusual. It is, and I think it's because the Secretary of State's offices are just over there kind of on the sidelines, nobody paying attention. And when that happens, you know, it's just sort of like atrophy.
You know, just to bring that down to on a local race, two of the races we had here recently, clerk of court, I think that should be a hired position. I find it hard to believe that we should run this
right,
as a political
yeah.
office.
Right, right, right.
You know?
Exactly. That makes just zero sense. And actually, Mark Hammond was clerk of court, my opponent,
yes.
in Spartanburg.
Yes.
And it was an elected office.
But I mean, don't understand that.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
I also think the coroner is an elected office. Why?
Why? Right.
I don't understand
right.
these things.
I mean, I have to say I have not given a lot of thought to the coroner's race, but your point being, why wouldn't you just
have the most qualified?
And somebody said to me, you know, in terms of the fact that I'm a Democrat and, well, you know, maybe things I believe in are counter to, you know, issues that other people don't believe in. And a friend of mine said, we were having lunch together, and he said, let me ask you something. Do you think about these issues when you hire your accountant or your lawyer? These are just, it's an administrative position.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with, you know, how do you feel about private school vouchers or what? You know, I mean,
right.
it has nothing to do with that. The person should be hired. You just
should
do
be
it.
Qualified
it's a business.
To do the job.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And what happens is they get elected, and then they just get reelected and reelected and reelected because...
Nobody goes up against them because it's their job, and they're, that, you know, and that's what happens.
Right. And that's how you become the DMV. You know, this is the, your standards are so low. You're not stretching to be the best because there's no reason to. You're just existing.
Right. And Whereas, if it was a job and you were being accountable to a boss,
right,
you would want to do the best job in order to keep your job.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. When people start screaming that it's taken them, they've been waiting for their corporate papers for 6 weeks.
That somebody...
Somebody's going to be taking action because, that's feedback that they're getting.
A reflection on them. Yeah, exactly.
And that is. I mean, I had one corporate lawyer in Columbia was telling me about this big, big, big corporate deal he was working on. And it was, you know, one of those deals where it was going to happen on a particular day. They didn't know when, so they had it all lined up. And it required him to set up 11 different little LLC corporations.
Okay.
He had all his paperwork, all the checks, all stacked up, each 11 stacks. The day came, he got the call, he sends his paralegal down to the Secretary of State's office. She comes back crying. She says, they would only give me 3. And he said, what do you mean? They said, well, they have a rule that they won't set up more than 3 per person, and they consider a law firm a person, so we can only do 3 a day. And the whole deal
fell apart.
And it was a multi-state deal, and all the other states were just like, the whole deal fell apart because of some silly little rule in the Secretary of State's office.
Wow. That's
scary. We'll change that.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we are here talking with Ginny Dearen. She is running for Secretary of State. Save our state, SOS. Okay, well, whatever. Save our ship.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. And Ginny, I'll now give you just a couple of minutes here to tell us why you should be. We've talked a lot about it, but now I want you to summarize it.
Well, I think I would really ask people to consider when they're casting their vote, and I ask them very sincerely for their consideration, that they choose me because they want their state government to perform and serve them well in the services that they provide. And I think that choosing me says I have high expectations of my government. Choosing me means that they value fresh ideas and fresh people. I think choosing me, they choose someone who is going to be working very, very hard every day in the office in Columbia. I will move to Columbia. I won't be commuting for, you know, a few days a week, part-time kind of a job. I'll really work hard, and I hope that folks will choose me because I'm knowledgeable and experienced in ways that the person needs to be, and I am someone who has a track record of real service, and I seek this office to continue serving the citizens of our state, and I hope that people will check me out and consider voting for me on November 4th.
How do they check you out?
Well, they can check me out by going to my website.
Okay.
Or just Googling my name. I am so out there, which I'm proud of. I am very out there. I'm traveling. I'm making lots of statements. I have lots of press releases, lots of statements, lots of plans. So if you just put Ginny Dearen, like Ginny like a gin and tonic, Dearen like a deer in the headlights, for Secretary of State, you will find me. But my website is Ginny. The number 4, SOS. And I will, since we're on the gin and tonic subject, just to emphasize...
Hold on 1 second. Yeah. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, while we're talking about,
gin
and tonics, yeah, just as an indication of how committed I am, I announced in February, and at that time I said, I am not going to have a drink of alcohol until I win.
Okay.
So it's been a long time. So victory party.
Dry spell.
I am going to have a heck of a victory party on November 4th. I'm looking forward to it for many reasons.
Absolutely. Well, Ginny Dearen, I certainly hope wish you well on your journey here. You certainly have a lot of good ideas.
Thank you.
And we really appreciate you stopping by this afternoon and taking the time to talk to us.
Well, thank you. I love Greenwood, and I'm happy to be here.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Political page is being set up as we speak, so we'll be able to check out all our candidates. Next week starts a big week for Politico, so you just keep checking out WCRS 1450 AM.net. That's going to do it for us. Bye-bye, everybody.